That's correct. And of course, what the only progress we've had is the progress of deception. Again, it was a systematic use of deception that got us into Iraq. And now the systematic use of deception is being used to keep us in Iraq.
Is that one of the reasons why Admiral Fallon is gone? Because he was a truth teller?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. You know, talk to General Shinseki, who told the Congress what it was going to cost. Before the invasion of Iraq. I mean, he was summarily dismissed, ridiculed by the administration.
What should be the United States' stance toward Iran?
We should be willing to engage, in fact, open up dialogue with the regime in Iran without preconditions, particularly the precondition of the administration.
Well, wouldn't it be better if we talked with Khamenei, the guy that's really in charge, rather than this clown, Ahmadinejad?
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that the Bush administration's policy is empowering Ahmadinejad. I mean, the economy of that country is in the toilet. Corruption has never been as high as it is. People are just fed up. And the reason that he was elected in the first place was because of his promise to deal with those two issues. So his numbers go way, 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 way down. And what happens? We start saber-rattling. He takes the nationalistic card out and begins to get more politically popular. So his base now is political base is sustained by his defense of the nation against the attacks coming from George Bush.
Yes, this is the Guy James Show coming to you from the Blue Waters and Sandy Beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida. Yes, we're in the Naples-Fort Myers area and streaming this program all across the country and around the world. And I do, hey, and especially want to thank a couple of folks that from Europe who wrote recently, one from France and one from Great Britain. I really love hearing your comments about what's going on here in the U.S. It's very insightful. Many times we Americans still have that ugly American attitude. We're the biggest, the best, the smartest, and all this and that. It's good to be reminded now and then. Not that these emails were derogatory in any way, shape, or form, but it's good to be reminded what the attitudes are about our country from outside. After all we get to hear is what our mainstream media tells us, and that's pretty damn little nowadays, and pretty biased as well. So thank you. And if you are an expat living overseas, like to let us know, and we hear from lots of you, why please do. I love getting your emails, and forgive me for not answering everybody's email. I do the best I can as time permits. to answer your email. I do want to make a correction right off today. There was something said on the show yesterday that is not true, and in the interest of truth, and that's what this show is about. We always try and be truthful on this show when it comes to important matters. Yeah, we joke around, we have some fun and all that, but when it comes to important matters, we like to make sure that we're passing on the truth to you. And something was said by our guest yesterday, Lieutenant Shine. I didn't challenge him on it because, honestly, I didn't know. You know, they say never ask a question if you don't know the answer to it. I didn't know the answer to what he said yesterday, so I did not challenge him on it. Maybe I should have anyway. But he did mention that the Admiral, I guess, the Coast Guard, was married to a woman who's an heiress of the Hess oil fortune, and that they were relatives of Rudolf Hess of Nazi Germany, which is not true. They're not relatives of Rudolf Hess from Nazi Germany. So just want to set that straight. Found out about that today, last night actually, and knew it had been said on the program, and I don't like to let any of our listeners go off with false information and repeat. You know how that goes. So once the cat's out of the bag, it's hard to get it put back in again. But I did want to let you know that right off the bat today. We have an interesting guest a little later on, an interview that, frankly, I want to do and I don't want to do. It's important that we have the interview. You've all read the stories about the suicides of our military folks, and it's become a real problem, and we're going to have Joyce Lucy on a little later in the program, in the second hour of the program. She and her husband lost their son, Jeff, as a result of suicide, an Iraqi veteran. And it's a sad tale indeed, and there are too many of these stories now. It's coming to light from the Pentagon that we're having a real problem with this, and it's something that must be talked about, should be talked about. And after all, we know the economy is bad and all that in this country, and it's come to the forefront of the economy has of the number one issue in the election. But far too many people have forgotten that there is a war going on. And we must be ever vigilant to make sure at least that if our people have to be over there, and what I mean by have to be over there, because the president ordered them over there, not because we need to be, but because he ordered them there, they're there doing their duty that they swore that they would do and follow the commander-in-chief, no matter how misguided he might be. And I feel he is. You know that. We must be ever vigilant to make sure that at least, at the very least, we can make sure that they're getting proper care and proper psychological counseling and so forth, so that we can perhaps stem this tide of suicides in the military. It's a tragic situation. And I hope by putting the story out that at least we can help in some way and inform the public on it. Lots of things I wanted to talk about today, and actually a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and I hope you'll give us a call on the program today, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. Something I don't ordinarily do, but because it falls in line with something I wanted to talk about today, I wanted to talk about our economy today and John Sidney McCain, how he feels about the economy and his expertise on the situation. I picked up our local newspaper today. It's the Fort Myers News Press. It's got a pretty good circulation here in Southwest Florida. It's a Gannett paper, I guess, yeah. I wonder how many of your local papers are like this one. Headlines on the paper today, no confidence, showing a graph headed straight down. Southwest Florida consumers and U.S. consumers are more pessimistic than at any time since the Iraqi invasion. Home prices here down 34% since December of 2005. 1,674 foreclosures. Imagine that. 1,674 foreclosures in this county last month. 212 bankruptcies, 6.3% unemployment. We are at what we call the season, the height of the season here, the season running from January through Easter usually, and this year it'll be a couple of weeks after Easter, is when all the snowbirds come from the north to enjoy the beautiful weather that we have. And there are many businesses here in Southwest Florida that depend on January, February, March, and April to make their living for the entire season. You make what you can during the season, you hang on the other 8 months, and start all over again getting ready for the season. And many, many businesses here are in that situation. Well, yes, restaurants and so forth, retail shopping places are busier now than they were before the season, quite naturally, because we've got a huge influx of people here. But they're not spending the money they normally do. And they're not having the crowds they normally have at the restaurants and the shopping centers and so forth. And they're figuring that a goodly number of restaurants, chains and all, will be closing their doors forever after the season, going belly up. Many, many people in this area having that problem. And I know it's a bit more severe here than it is a lot of places. I know that, but it's ugly news. And to keep going on the front page of this paper today, schools face big cuts in budget. The schools don't have any money. I mean, they don't have any money. College costs raising by 6% here in Florida. Well, that's all fine and dandy if you've got lots of money, but if you don't, you know what that means. So it's an ugly situation, a very ugly situation. I know many of you are in the same boat. Different locales around the country, people are suffering mightily. And I don't mean to insinuate that this is the only area suffering, because it certainly is not. We hear the Economist on TV and the Wall Street people talking about whether we are or we are not in a recession. And just ask, talk to your neighbor. Talk to the guy down the street with a small business. Talk to the guy losing his home. Talk to the people pouring gas into their car at $3.43 a gallon right now here, regular. Talk to those people and ask them if we're in a recession or not. You know, most people have, well, either rent to pay or a mortgage to pay. They've got their insurance to pay on their home and debt service. A lot of people have car payments. A lot of people paying tuition for college for their kids. A lot harder to get student loans these days. Food costs going out of sight. Gasoline out of sight. Most people got internet service, TV cable, their electricity bill, all that. And after all that, you got what's left is your disposable income. And there's not a whole lot of that lately. And when you don't have any disposable income, you cut back. You cut back the things that aren't absolutely essential. And as I mentioned yesterday, the manager down at the grocery store told me more and more people are buying store brands. They're getting more store brands in because they're cheaper. But guess what? The price on those are going up as well. So you cut back on groceries. You cut back in gas. You don't go eat out. And groceries cost more, so you get less for your dollar. And imagine this, something I hadn't thought about. Prices are going up. There are people that are on food stamps. They don't get an increase in their food stamps. They just get less for them. And these are people that possibly don't have a way of going out and earning some more. Single mother, whatever, whoever's unfortunate enough to be using food stamps. The food stamps aren't going very far these days. And people on permanently fixed incomes. How are they getting by with these food prices going up? But it's harder to purchase things like that, and so you don't go anywhere. You don't spend anything. you don't have anything to spend. And it's all a vicious cycle. If you don't have anything to spend, why, the sales of durable goods go down. People aren't out buying things. And let's face it, as we've all talked about, the one thing that kept this big old economy of ours just chugging right along over the last decade or so was credit. And a lot of people refinanced their homes as the prices went up. They built equity in their house because prices went up. They borrowed on it. And, man, they're paying the piper now because many people, many, many people owe more in their homes than they're worth. And I'm not condemning people for that. I'm certainly not. That's not what I mean here. The growth kept going and it kept going and people's income was not keeping up. And it was an easy thing to go out and borrow on their home, borrow on the equity on their home. Who knew that a big crash like this would be coming? Many people were in a situation where they absolutely had to do that just to keep their head above water. But it wasn't a big problem because the equity kept going up. But now, the values are headed the other way. And many, many people that I know, and I'm sure, and I've heard from so many of you, many people that I've heard from you, I've heard from many of you, are not that far away from terrible financial situations. A loss of a job in a two-job family, some sort of serious medical bills of some kind, barely hanging on now, one paycheck to the next, barely getting by, maybe even falling a little bit more behind each time. It's a difficult situation. And if you know of people like that, if you're in that situation yourself and you'd like to talk about it, I wish you would call. I wish you would call and let's talk about it. It's getting ugly. And it's the wolf's at the door of many, many homes across America. And it's sad to see that this once thriving nation, this middle class that we had that did so well, middle class that really built this nation where she is today, is getting left in the ditch. And we see this bailout of Bear Stearns. And we see politicians and economists and Wall Street people saying, well, you know, the fault is with these people that went out and borrowed this money on their homes. And I'm not denying that a lot of people got themselves in trouble and shouldn't have. I cannot deny that. But these Wall Street types and the wealthy types are looking down on everybody that's having a problem right now and say, well, you should have known better. Should have known better. You should have known when you got that mortgage that you couldn't pay it. Even though that mortgage broker told you that the value of your house is going to continue to go up and so you'll always be in good shape, you should have known. Well, who should have known? Who's more competent in this whole situation? Did the people at Bear Stearns know? Did they? People that are, that's their lives, that's their business, investment banking. And they failed, and failed miserably, and the director of that company takes home, what was it, $266 million himself over the last two or three years? And they want to look at the mortgage holders who are losing their homes and say, hey, you're the stupid ones? You're the irresponsible ones? I don't think so. Although, and again, I'm not holding people blameless who got themselves in over their heads, way over their heads. And I know of a couple of cases where people just were living a pipe dream. But I hate it when I hear Wall Street being... John McCain. I see Johnny Boy McCain is saying tough luck to everybody having mortgage problems. And it's just pretty much how he said it today. You know, he said it was okay to bail out Bear Stearns, but not for homeowners. That's right. He said the Bear Stearns bailout met his criteria, but not the homeowners. Ah, didn't we all know that compassionate conservatism would rear its ugly head sooner or later? A while back, Johnny Boy said he didn't know much about the economy, and yesterday he proved it with his, so compassionate, if not completely ignorant, statements about who's at fault in this mortgage crisis. My question is, how much longer will Joe Lunchbucket Republican put up with this kind of BS from the party that he believes in? How much longer will those who vote Republican allow their party leaders to take everything they've got and give it to the wealthy? How much longer will it take for them to take off their blinders and see the truth of the matter? And then do something about it? At the polls. How much longer? Some people never learn. And maybe some of these folks won't either. The last two elections, they certainly haven't learned. There was, 51 million people? 51 million that pulled the lever for Junior Bush. And there'll be a lot that pull it this time for Bush the Third, because actually that's who John McCain is. He's got Daddy Bush, he had Junior Bush, and you're going to have McCain Bush here. Because that's what it's about. John McCain. I hope you heard his speech. His news conference, whatever you want to call it. He's got it all figured out. I heard him say so. All he has to do is get all the accountants in the country together. And he said this today. You know, get all the accountants together in a big meeting, and they'll figure out this economic mess we're in. Real simple. And I really had to laugh out loud at his comments yesterday about the housing problems. First he said bigger down payments will fix everything. And then he followed up later on by saying that the lenders should pass out mortgages with zero down payments, and that left me scratching my head wondering what the hell he was talking about. Sometimes John Sidney McCain's straight talk is not so straight. And he mentioned that the banks need to trust each other more. Oh, yeah, I'm sure all the people over at Bear Stearns right now think the people at Morgan Stanley are perfectly trustworthy, offering them $2 a share and then coming back and saying 10, tried to get it for 2 and then came back and offered 10. I'm sure the Bear Stearns people all trust the Morgan Stanley people real well. and McCain said something I just found absolutely profound. Says sometimes prices go up and sometimes prices go down. And I thought, shazam. Where do you get straight talk like that? Sometimes prices go up and sometimes prices go down. What an insight into the problem that man has. As I was watching him, I was thinking the average fourth grader would have thought he couldn't get a passing grade in their math class. And really and truly, and I mean this, and I've thought this about him for a long, long time. He made Junior Bush look like a genius, and believe me, that's not easy to do. Not easy at all. Let's head over to the phone. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita, how are you?
I'm pretty good, how are you?
Good.
I think this has to do with what you're talking about, because I want to ask you a question. I don't know if it's that way, you know, I live in Central Florida. I don't know if it's this way down in your way, but everywhere you look, like where empty fields were, like empty pasture land or something, they're building houses. Do you know, like single-family houses, either single-family houses or condominiums.
Hmm.
And just hundreds of them, and you just everywhere you look, and I just wonder, why are they doing this with all the problems we're having?
I don't know. No, it isn't. It is not that way here.
It's all over. It's just, I think, where are all these people going to come from to live in these places?
One thing that we're having in this area right now is that I've noticed that there are many commercial properties being built, little strip malls,
uh-huh.
and they're being built and they're sitting there empty. But home permits have dropped to nearly nothing here in Lee County, Florida.
Well, you would just have to see this. I mean, it's you know, like if I go to another town or something, just see it. It looks like hundreds of them. I don't know.
Amazing. Yeah, it is. Building permits here, except for some commercial properties, mm-hmm. are practically nothing.
Do you think there's something behind it?
Well, I do know that a lot of these big developers own the land and is either put up or shut up, either put up some houses and sell them for cost so that they can get rid themselves of the huge land expense. I know some members of
that. The little neighborhood I live in, you know, it's like a low-income, middle class, I guess. There's a lot of empty houses there.
I had you pictured living in a 6-bedroom, 7.5-bath with an indoor pool.
Please don't tell everybody my secrets.
You know, the marble floors, the whole business there. I really thought that, okay.
But there's just tons of empty houses. And they're even building a few out here, you know, and on vacant lots.
Lots of them for sale? I mean, do you see lots of for sale signs?
Yes. But you see the for sale signs and that's it. You don't see anybody moving in. Like across the street from me, there's houses that you buy to rent, and they're about $500 or $600 a month, and people are in and out, and every time they move out, the people that own it come and clean it up, you know, like they live there, and partially destroy it.
They built some brand new condos not far from where I live. They're within sight of where I live. And very, very nice. Very nice. And, mm-hmm. of course, it was right during this when prices started to fall. People paid top buck for them. In fact, investors came. I know one investor that bought 6 of them and paid a hefty price for them and thought the market was going to keep going up. And those are the people I don't have any sympathy for. But they bought them and couldn't sell them then. The market dropped out, and now they're having to rent them. And I saw one day recently they had a dumpster parked out in front of one of them, and we're hauling drywall out of the place. Now, this is a place only a year old,
uh-huh.
and they were stripping the drywall off of the place, mm-hmm. and it had been destroyed inside.
Yeah, this is out here, yeah. It's all these houses, you know, they say we buy houses.
Mm-hmm.
These places, I don't know if you have them down there, but we have a ton of them around here. And also, they're still building these highways, too, here. I mean, Central Florida is almost completely paved over.
Well, that's one thing in Southern Florida we don't have. We don't have enough.
Really?
We don't have enough roads. That's why we have the awful
you
traffic.
You could use some of ours.
Well, I wish we had them. So, where are you standing? Let me ask you. Everybody calls today or emails or whatever. I'm asking where are you standing on the election right now? What do you think is going to happen in Florida? Are you for having a do-over in the primary, or do you think the vote that we already did should count? How do you feel about it?
Well, I don't know. I say go ahead and let it count the way it stands. I don't know,
mm-hmm.
but I'll do whatever they want me to do. But I think we should count for something, somewhere,
yeah,
somehow.
I think so too.
And I don't know about Michigan though, because you know we had everybody on ours.
Yes, we did. Everybody was on the ballot here.
And did you notice that Mike Gravel had almost as many as Chris Dodd in Florida?
Yeah.
I was looking it up the other day to see what it was. Yeah, bless his heart.
Yeah, I think
it was great in his time.
I mentioned yesterday that I met Mike at in Washington here last
uh-huh.
week, and he's a most unusual individual.
Yeah, but he was great in his time, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was a long time ago,
he
wasn't it?
He should be honored
yeah.
for that. But, I'm just hanging on. I don't know, but I hope to God we get a Democrat in.
Well, it's the only hope we seem to have right now. I mean, there's so many people living on fixed incomes, and I don't know how. Juanita, I was at the drugstore yesterday, and I don't know, perhaps you and many of our listeners have experienced this. I don't know what kind of pills they were talking about, but a gentleman walked into the pharmacist and had been out shopping this pharmacy. In fact, they were at a CVS, and the price was so high on the pills, he didn't have insurance, that he went around to other drugstores to get the price on. They were $138 each.
A pill?
A pill. I don't know what kind of a pill that could be. I don't know. Maybe some sort of cancer treatment or something, but $138 a piece.
Wow.
And it was, you know, $4,000, and this gentleman said, you know, he didn't have any insurance.
My gosh.
Yeah, I don't know what you do. He said, I won't be able to do this.
Do without, pretty much.
Yeah.
I've been there. I've been there, done that.
Yeah, and what do? You're on prescription medicine. The price keeps going up. It's ugly. It's ugly.
My last job I had was at a retirement home, and the people there that the money they were having to pay out for their medicine every month, my God.
Yeah.
You know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars.
Oh, sure.
Had it. They weren't like millionaires, but they were well off. But still, that's a lot of money.
Well, at least thank goodness for like Target and some of these other stores that have some of these $4 prescriptions.
Yeah.
I don't know how many others have discovered it. I've found that some prescription medicine is cheaper at Target.
I haven't tried Target.
With no insurance than it is with insurance at some of the drugstore. So.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind.
And also Publix says you can get free antibiotics.
Ah.
From their prescription, yeah.
Okay, that for those around the country, that's our drugstore, or that's our grocery chain here.
I was talking to a neighbor of mine that she had to go off of a prescription that was helping her because her insurance wouldn't pay for it anymore, and she's been trying different ones, and I told her I'd try and see. And I told her about the different places that I knew about, and she didn't know. You know, so a lot of people just don't know what's available.
Yes. But isn't it sad that we have to worry about things like that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think if there's, and I've said so many times on the program, if there's one thing that we all owe each other as a society, it's health care.
Definitely.
I mean, we don't owe each other a house or a car, or, you know, we don't maybe owe each other, but we owe each other health care.
Yeah, definitely.
And this nation is rich enough that we can afford health care, especially if we got it back down to the prices that it ought to be. Some of it's just crazy.
I know, absolutely.
You know, it's like that $138 pill. Come on,
that's unbelievable.
How much it cost them to make that?
Yeah. Bless his heart.
Yeah. Thanks so much for your call, Juanita. It's great to hear from you.
Good to hear from you, too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yes, I actually did see a gentleman at the pharmacy pay $138 per pill for 30 pills, 30 days supply of pills. I don't know what they could be. Pharmacist didn't want to tell me for privacy reasons, but I had never known that any prescription medicine cost that much, and I mentioned to him, I said, you know, probably by the ounce it's more expensive than gold. And he said, yes, it is. So I don't know. I don't know what it could have been, but what a shame we're in that position. I feel so bad for a lot of our elderly people have a choice between eating and having their prescription medicine, and you wonder how many people in this country die long before they should. Because they don't have the proper medication, they can't afford the proper medication or the medical care. You wonder how many young people in this country die. You wonder how many people die prematurely because they can't afford good preventative medicine, something that's almost unheard of in this country because it costs so much. What a shame that is. What a blight upon our country that we're even talking about this. It's just almost criminal. It's immoral that we have people in this country dying because they can't get the proper health care. It's not right in a civilized society. It just is not. Well, we're going to pause for a break right now. We'll be back in a moment or two. Don't go away.
Round up the usual suspects.
Hi, boys and girls. This is Rick Goodner, part of the Weekend Wrecking Crew. I'm here to tell you that you cannot miss Billy Shears. The man knows his music. The man knows what you're thinking. Tune in and listen. You'll be surprised. He's going to play the very song that you were thinking that you needed to hear. Now, he's a genius. Maybe a bit psychic. I promise you. Tune in on the weekend, listen to Billy Shears Night Sounds, and you will hear the song you've been waiting to hear. And you'll enjoy your time as much as I do. Right here, on the Horn, Head On Radio Network. Make sure you don't miss what you've been waiting to hear with Billy Shear.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Play as time goes by.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year, and a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with those scissors,
it's the least you can do.
And all of the things that I said that I wanted come rushing right in my head when I meet you. 14 joys and a thrill to be merry. All of the things that they say are very sentimental. Gentle wind blowing through my life again. Sentimental, really gentle one.
All I need is
sentimental.
Thank you. Thanks so much for being with us this afternoon here on The Guy James Show. Proud member of the Head On Radio Network. Finest liberal radio network in the country. No doubt about it. That's my opinion anyway. And obviously some of yours. I appreciate your emails and your support of the program very, very much. And we're very proud to have the listeners that we do. Probably the best informed listeners in all of internet radio, all of radio, everywhere. People really know the issues, and I'm very proud of that. Well, all of us here on the Head On Radio Network are. You know, Mark and Bob and Dr. Bill and everybody on the and John and everybody does their utmost to make sure that you get accurate, interesting information every day. And accuracy and truthfulness is a hallmark of people here on the Head On Radio Network, and I know you've noticed that by now. And we appreciate your listenership very, very much so. I was talking about John McCain and his views on the economy. And many of you know who Chuck Todd is. Chuck is on MSNBC a lot. And he was talking about how McCain gets away with such things. And I jotted down a few notes of what Chuck said about it. And it's true. McCain does get away with saying stupid things. And if Hillary or Obama said them, why, it would be, well, he says, even if he gets dinged on experience stuff, oh, he says he's Mr. Experience. Doesn't he know the difference between this stuff? He's got enough of that in the bank, at least with the media, that he can get away with it. I mean, the irony to this is, had either Senator Clinton or Senator Obama misspoke like that, and he was talking about McCain's idiot comments about the Shias, the Sunnis, and the Iranians, he said it would have been on a running loop, and it would become a big problem for a couple of days for them. For McCain, it made it through one news cycle, and that was it. And I know you've all noticed, we've had the press going nuts for about two solid weeks now about Reverend Wright and Hillary's lie about her Bosnia trip, and here we have a guy who wants to be in charge of a nation that doesn't know any more than the average third grader about finance and the economy. And the point is, it's just not John Sidney McCain. Ronnie Reagan and Junior Bush got away with it too. And the media lets these Republicans go out and speak nonsense to the public all the time, and they don't challenge them on it. And meanwhile, you get the Democrats being run into the ground, being called dishonest and boring, you know, and they can't be trusted. But here we have McCain. He talked like George Bush on the most pressing issue that we have facing us right now. And they call it the Straight Talk Express. I don't get it. Unless you think that McCain has been straight-talking people about how he feels about the economy, for example, let me remind you of a few things. McCain voted against discouraging predatory lending practices. He voted against it like a good little Republican. In 2005, McCain voted against an amendment prohibiting law-breaking, high-cost, predatory mortgage lenders from collecting funds from homeowners who are forced into bankruptcy court. Senate Bill 256. He voted against it. McCain failed to vote on a bill to overhaul mortgage lending practices of FHA. In 2007, just last year, McCain failed to vote on passage of a bill that would overhaul the mortgage lending practices of the FHA, and the bill would reduce the required minimum down payment for FHA-insured loan and simplify its calculation, requiring a flat 1.5% of the appraised value of the home, Senate Bill 2338. and McCain failed to sign on to the Truth in Lending Act less than 4 months ago. McCain failed to sign on to this bipartisan initiative providing protection to consumers taking out mortgage loans. And among other measures, it was designed to establish new lending standards to ensure that loans are affordable and fair. And McCain also refused to co-sponsor this legislation in the 107th Congress as well, Senate Bill 2452. So here we have another Republican legislator who is no friend of the average American. It's okay for Bear Stearns. We'll give them whatever they need, and the Morgan Stanleys, whatever. Whatever they need, we'll give it to them. But screw you, the average American. It's getting difficult to listen to some of these guys. Especially when you take a good look at how things are going for these fat cats on Wall Street, despite the troubles, despite running some of their companies into the ground. I mentioned yesterday that I wanted to talk a little bit about it today. There's a man named James Cayne, C-A-Y-N-E. He's the chairman of the investment banking giant Bear Stearns. And earlier this month, when Bear Stearns was about to go belly up, this 74-year-old Cayne was out playing bridge at a national tournament in Detroit while his company was getting ready to go under. Of course, he could afford to be somewhat nonchalant about his company's future. He's never going to have to worry about his future. He stepped down from that post in January when he saw the handwriting on the wall. But while he was the CEO of Bear Stearns, he took home over $232 million in compensation. $232 million. Walked out. Left people holding the bag. Left the American taxpayers holding the bag. And what did he do to earn $232 million? Very simple. He helped create what Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph Stiglitz last week called the worst financial problem we've had since the Great Depression. And this man helped create it. And for that, he takes home $232 million. Wall Street firms make a lot of money in good times. They leverage it to make tons of money in a good bull market like we had for a long time. And they should have seen. These people who are experts in the field, they should have seen that the subprime loans made up just 17% of all new mortgage loans in the year 2000. And in 2006, subprime loans were 44% of their loans. So tell me they didn't see this coming. Tell me they didn't help move this along with greed, sheer unadulterated greed. And you would think that somebody on Wall Street would recognize the fact that this was a deep, deep, deep problem and something that these wizards on Wall Street just wouldn't do. But no, they suffer from the disease of unbridled greed. And it can happen to a lot of the firms on Wall Street. I think we've yet to see the rest of this house of cards fall. And I don't know what the effect will be on the world economic system when it does fall. But this Kane guy and his four top Bear Stearns executive buddies took home $620 million in paychecks and another $296 million cashing out their shares of company stock. Now, there's something inherently wrong in a system like that. There's something wrong. It's immoral. It should be illegal. Oh, and don't give me that argument. This is America. We're allowed to make all the money we want. Are you allowed to screw people like this? Monstrous paychecks for these people, and then they walk out on the company after they've raped and pillaged every bit they can from the public and the shareholders of the company, and they walk away and leave it. But the former chairman of Bear Stearns, he's not going to have to worry about it. Not one bit. Lots of people are losing their homes to foreclosure, but Kane still's got a roof over his head. Brand new one, as a matter of fact. See where the New York Observer reports he just bought a $25.8 million Manhattan condo. It's very ugly. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I see the stock market today is down 118 points. Where are we at with, let's see, where we're at with commodities today. Let's see how the oil's done. It was up several dollars today. Don't count on oil. It was headed down for a little bit, but don't count on that staying there, that's for sure. Oil is at $105.90, and gold is up $14 to $9.49. So, Wall Street's chugging along today, 118 points down. You know, the way this market has been lately, that 118 points can go up or down in 2 minutes. I don't think any of us have seen the market fluctuate quite so much as it has here in the past, two or three months. Wild swings, up 400 points one day, down 300 the next. It's just, you don't know what's going to happen. It's all a Vegas game. It's all what the insiders decide it's going to be. That's what it is. 866-546-5254. I do want to remind everybody that in the second hour of the program, right around 10 minutes after the hour, we're going to have Joyce Lucy, who lost her son Jeff, an Iraqi veteran. And you'll want to hear that interview. This problem of suicide is completely out of hand in our armed forces. And we hope an awareness by the public, and that's what the interview is about. We hope an awareness will help. Certainly a problem that needs to be helped. Where are you sitting on this Hillary Obama thing right now? Do you feel like I do? Oh, God, let it be over with one way or another. Please, somehow. If Obama is to have it, why, if either of them are going to have it, it's going to go to the convention, isn't it? It's going to go all the way. And they're going to have to slug it out about Florida and Michigan. And we're going to have to hear the press going on and on about what an ugly campaign it is. I wonder to let you know what kind of a neighborhood I live in. I often read the letters to the editor. I read them every day here in the newspaper. And it's fascinating to me to read people's opinions. And, of course, I get many emails from you about the same thing. But I wanted to read you a couple letters from the editorial page today in the local newspaper. It says, Obama clean, Hillary not. Obama's continuing success in the primaries makes it pretty apparent that the majority of Democrats are able to see Hillary's campaign for what it is, a sneaky backdoor way to get Bill an unconstitutional third term in spite of the term limit law. I don't agree with Senator Obama on very many of his positions, but at least he appears to be honest and ethical. At least so far, he hadn't been fined by the Federal Election Commission, and we haven't heard about him receiving large cash contributions of obviously laundered money from poor dishwashers and janitors. Well, that's from Dale in North Fort Myers. And here's another one. Thank God for McCain. The Clintons are trying to push the idea that Obama lacks the experience to be president. They claim to have years of experience. This is not something to brag about, as I see it. It seems to me it is years of experience like the Clintons have that's put us and America in the worst shape we've been in for a long, long time. Maybe the lack of the experience is the reason the American people are voting for Obama. Keep this in mind as you vote this November, this letter says. That is, if the Democrats don't change more rules and don't count your vote. Then there's the superdelegates that can vote for whoever they want to, even if it isn't the candidate they were appointed for. See, this person has no understanding of this at all. And yet they allow this to be printed in the newspaper. You would think the editors would look at this and go, well, this person doesn't know what they're talking about. I'm not going to put this in the paper. But they put it in as fact. Goes on to say, this is the party you want running our country when they can't even get a primary election right? Thank God we have an alternative. John McCain not only has the right experience, but the record to back it up. Oh, and I particularly like this one. Our local congressman here is Connie Mack. He recently married the Bono woman, you know, Sonny Bono's widow. Says, I, for one, have to admire and also agree with Connie Mack and his stance on Chavez. For the past 12 years, I've been going to Central America on a monthly basis. Personally, I have seen changes in the attitude of the people toward the United States. Oh, you think so? What an observation. Unless the United States gets more active in this region, we will have one country after another go communist. Oh, there we have that old communist thing again. Chavez is bribing all these small and poor countries with cheap oil. We cannot afford for this region to become communist. Representative Connie Mack has every right and also duty to ring the alarm bell. Commies, they're coming after us again. Stop those commies. Florida is the closest state to Central America, and we'd be most affected by a communist Central America. I came to the United States in 1952 from Germany and love America dearly. I'm very glad that Representative Connie Mack is not asleep the way our leaders in Washington appear to be. That out of the local paper, Letters to the Editor, when I tell you I live in right-wing heaven. I'm not kidding. One of the more do-nothing congressmen that there is in the United States House of Representatives, Connie Mack, ran for office here, doesn't live here, ran for office with pictures of his wife and family, and no sooner was the ink dried on his signature when he got sworn in as he dumped his wife and started dating the Sonny Bono's widow, and they're happily married now. They call her... I don't know. She referred to as Mac Bono or Bono Mac or I don't know. But they're both have a residence away from here. I think he maintains an apartment here. That's what I hear he does. But he does not live here. But he's a privilege. He's privileged. His father was a congressman, and so he's entitled to be a congressman, and that's. That's how it is. It's a family thing. You know, and that's fairly prevalent in this country, isn't it? We've got that elite class that just, my dad was a senator, I should be a senator. I mean, we see that a lot in this country. We could name off quite a few instances of that, where politicians' sons and daughters and mothers and fathers and aunts and uncles and cousins all related. Many, many instances of that. Okay, I was looking down our schedule here. After the top of the hour, we're going to have our interview with Joyce Lucci. And we're going to talk a little bit about Dick Cheney, one of my favorite people. I hope you'll stay tuned for that. And we might even mention Walmart just a little bit. I've got an article about Walmart I'd like to talk about. As you know, they're one of my favorite companies. I just love Walmart. They've done so much for America, or China, anyway. Nation's largest employer. What a shame that is, that we've got a company as patriotic as Walmart is our nation's largest employer, a company that doesn't give a damn about its employees or its customers. You can tell them I said that. That's how I feel about them. No, you will not catch me in a Walmart. You will not. I do not go into a Walmart. Was also awful tempted here not too long ago when I couldn't find something anyplace else, and I knew Walmart had it, but no. I drove right on by and said, hell with it, I'll do without it, rather than go into Walmart. Felt good about that. Oh, yes. Well, we're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. You listen to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. And we'll be back right after the news, and we hope you'll be back with us.
International News Net. According to Saudi newspaper Okaz, last Friday Dick Cheney met the Saudi king and his ministers. The following day, the Saudi government announced it is preparing national plans to deal with any sudden radioactive hazards that may affect the kingdom following experts' warnings of possible attacks on Iran's Bushehr nuclear reactors. In Iraq Tuesday, 54 Iraqis were killed and 129 wounded. One American soldier was also killed. Curfews have been imposed on 6 Iraqi provinces. 3 U.S. citizens working for the U.S. government in Baghdad were wounded in a mortar attack in the Green Zone. 9 American workers suffering severe health problems from working in Iraq are accusing KBR, a former subsidiary of Halliburton, of knowingly exposing them to sodium dichromate, a deadly substance, and failing to provide them with protective equipment. Under a World War II-era law, employers are generally protected from employee lawsuits, except where it can be proven the company intentionally harmed its employees or committed fraud. KBR is citing the law, the Defense Base Act, as grounds to reject the workers' request for damages. To avoid payroll taxes, KBR hired its American workers through subsidiaries registered in the Cayman Islands, allowing KBR to dodge hundreds of millions of dollars in Social Security and Medicare taxes. That gives the workers' lawyer, Mike Doyle, a chance to argue that KBR is not an employer protected by federal law, but a third party that can be sued. Indonesia said Monday it will not fully share bird flu virus samples with the World Health Organization until a new global mechanism is in place. Indonesia is the country worst hit by H5N1 avian influenza, with 129 human cases, of whom 105 have died. Indonesia sent bird flu virus samples last month to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, a WHO collaborating lab, after a six-month hiatus when it won assurance that it would get access to affordable vaccines. But Bayu Krishnamurti, head of a national commission dealing with bird flu, said Indonesia would only send virus samples on a case-by-case basis until a new virus-sharing mechanism currently being drawn up by the WHO took effect. Indonesia drew international concern when it defied protocol and refused to share its virus samples last year, saying it wanted guarantees from richer nations and drug makers that poor countries would get access to affordable vaccines derived from their samples.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Tune in
in to Fox Stop this Thursday midnight for part 3 of Lennon on Lennon, Blame It on Bermuda. This week, we'll listen in on the creative process of starting over and I'm losing you.
I've had tongue-in-cheek all along. I'm the walrus. All of them had tongue-in-cheek. Just because other people see depths of whatever in it, what does it really mean? I am the Eggman, you know. It could have been the pudding basin for all I care. Just tongue-in-cheek.
So be there this Thursday, midnight Eastern on Foxed Up, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn. This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year, and a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with those scissors,
it's the least you can do.
James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get dropped out. 6... 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show. So glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. It's a sunny day here. I hope it's nice where you are as well, all across America and well, around the world. Glad to have each and every one of you with us. I was looking at the email we got at the top of the hour. My goodness, you folks are active today, very active today. As I mentioned early on, that we had an interesting guest coming up today, and I'm privileged right now to introduce Joyce Lucy. Joyce is the mother of one of our soldiers that we've lost with tragic circumstances, something that needs to be discussed in this country. And Joyce, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
I had not realized until word was sent to me earlier this week about how out of hand the veteran suicide problem is. Can you tell us a little bit about the situation? I know you're well versed.
Yeah, well, like our son that came back, there's a lot of veterans that are coming back that are struggling with emotional turmoil you know, that they're bringing back with them. And they, between the stigma of the military in not wanting to be looked at as being weak, and not really knowing where to go to seek help, we're having a real problem. A lot of them are just in their homes, like Jeffrey, who was a reservist, which is another problem because they are not part of the regular military, so they don't have the support system. They come back, they're tossed right back into their communities, and expected to go on as normal, like they had not just been in a war zone. And it's very difficult, and we're losing the ones that are unable to handle this, like Jeffrey was.
And there's no way to spot these people ahead of time, is there? I mean, they see horrible things.
Well, I think we need to do better screening process, and there are they are starting to become aware of this. When Jeffrey was screened at Camp Pendleton, he was going in the direction of having an issue with what had happened over there, and he was kind of cautioned that if he kept going in that direction, he would no doubt be held 2 to 4 months longer. Because to send him back to his base over here on the East Coast, he would have been deactivated. And then that would take him out of the insurance that the military has. Because he had been activated since January of 2003. Returned back in July 2003. So by cautioning him, he changed his responses. And then nothing had been forwarded, let's say, to the base command over here on the East Coast that something was maybe, you know, you might want to watch this particular person. So Jeffrey came back to us. We thought everything was fine, you know, and until he started exhibiting different symptoms.
Now he was Jeffrey was a reservist.
Correct.
When had he joined the Marines?
He joined the Marines. He was in his first year of college.
And when was that?
1999.
So that was long before this 9/11 mess and all that. And he had no inkling. I mean, although he knew what might have happened, I doubt he ever dreamed he would be sent into a situation like Iraq.
No, definitely not. I know people will say, well, they volunteered. But at 18 years old, you have no idea. I mean, I wouldn't know what a war zone, what it would be like, and how I would react or how I would feel. You know, 18, you have no idea, especially a boy. I really believe that they take longer to mature. And, you know, it was, when he signed December 7th, 1999, he didn't have to enter boot camp until May because they were allowing him to finish his last semester of college. That was like, to Jeffrey, that might have been 10 years down the road,
mm-hmm.
though it was only 6 months. You know, he was just, he didn't realize what he was getting himself into.
How did he feel when it became obvious that, we started a preemptive war with in Iraq? What were his personal feelings about it?
He held a lot to himself. Jeffrey was not one to say he was nervous or scared. I know when 9/11 came about, he came home from his girlfriend's house and he said, oh, this is bad, and our unit's already on alert. So, and then from then on it was, well, I don't know, we're going for the weekend and I don't know if we're going to be put in lockdown. It was a year and a half or so of not knowing from month to month what was going to happen, except that, you know, you ended up getting your uniforms for the desert and then you ended up doing your wills. So, you know, you kind of knew where we were headed. And then I know he wrote in his journal, which we didn't see till it was probably well after he had come home. He wrote that they were he said, we can't let our families know how scared we are. You know, we have to keep the front up. So, you know, he knew, inside he knew he was really frightened. But
did you hear from him often when he was there?
He was, during the initial invasion, he was there. So there were no emails. We received probably 5, maybe 6 letters from Jeff. Most of them were short, except a couple that when he was in Kuwait prior to the beginning of the invasion. But after that, it was just, let you know I'm okay. I'm supposed to be watching, you know, the area, not supposed to be writing, that kind of thing. Just wanted to let you know I was okay. And then he mentioned things like, you know, I guess I knew when I came here that I'd have to see and do things that I'd have a problem with. So but, you know, I'm trying to deal with it. I'm starting to deal with it. But apparently he never actually did deal with it.
And how long was he out before his life ended?
11 months.
11 months.
11 months, yeah. He came home in July. He was deactivated in August. He died in June 22nd, the following year.
And one of the very sad things about this is he will not be counted among the casualties of the war, will he?
No. No, and he is a casualty of this war. There is no doubt.
He most certainly is.
Right, but those that come home and struggle with what this war did to them emotionally will never be on any kind of wall. They're the uncounted, unacknowledged people of this war, military of the war.
And there are many. I read where we now have a problem with veterans, all of our veterans, that they estimate we're having an estimated 120 veteran suicides per week.
And that was in 2005. They kind of got the general number of 4,000 or 5,000, and they broke it down per week, which would estimate to be about 120 per week. But, of course, that covers all of our veterans from the various wars. But that's an outstanding number. I mean, people don't realize.
Yes.
You know, what these people are struggling with.
Well, he came home with the post-traumatic stress disorder. And how long was it before that was recognized? Was it ever recognized by the VA, and how was he treated?
He was never assessed for post-traumatic stress because they said they don't do that, or ours didn't anyway, unless you're alcohol-free. And Jeffrey was using alcohol to go to sleep, to numb his senses. And when he first came home, he seemed like he was fine. He reentered college. And in December is when he tossed his dog tags at his sister on Christmas Eve and said he was a murderer. So that, you know, kind of clued us in that we have a problem here. The only thing is, being parents, and Jeffrey was fine the next day as if nothing had happened, I think you put blinders on and you say, you know, he's okay. They said he's going to have to readjust. They all readjust. It takes time. And so I think you just say, oh, he's okay today.
You wanted to think he was okay, of course.
Big mistake. He went back to college. Just to give you something, Jeffrey saw Passion of the Christ, and I believe it was in February of that year,
mm-hmm.
came out. And my son would be more of a Mel Gibson or The Rock movie, you know, going to watch something like that in action. And he was totally absorbed by this movie. Came home and said, we need to go see it. And he went with his girlfriend. And we went, and it's a very, very compelling movie. And we could just think after Jeffrey died that he must have saw all the pain in this movie. And that's what attracted him. He was able to see himself, I think, because he had so much turmoil. Now, my son, when he was very close to the end, probably a month before he died, he had me listen to a song. And the words of the song, just one line, was something like, whatever happened to the young man's heart swallowed by pain as he slowly fell apart? And I'm looking down the barrel of a .45. You know, I panicked when he had me listen to that. And he kind of, you know, said, no, don't worry about it, Mom, not in that frame. I'm just looking down a dark tunnel. But he was basically letting us know that he was having a major problem. And
well,
we did get him, he did go to the VA, he did get involuntarily committed, but they did release him. And
that's an issue as well. He went to the VA, you had difficulty, as I understand it, even getting his records afterwards.
Right, right. We did get some of his records, but not the complete the complete records. And they did know when Jeffrey was involuntarily committed that he had voiced to them that he intended to harm himself. And he gave them the methods. He said he had a hose, which in the end that is how he died. He used a hose. And we didn't have that information. I'm not saying that you could stop somebody, but we would have done our best to make sure all that was, you know, we had already taken knives and liquor and step stools, anything that we thought might trigger something, because Jeff had mentioned to his sister that he had a rope and a tree in a brook behind our house picked out. And then he said, well, no, I'd never do anything. Don't worry, because I would not want to hurt Mom and Dad. So
and the pain becomes so great, held within, that the thoughts of that are overwhelmed with his personal suffering. I can't imagine the hell. I can't.
Well, I think you lose every facet of your life is destroyed when you're dealing with PTSD because you can't focus. So he couldn't go to college, didn't finish his finals because he couldn't stay in class with panic attacks. His relationship was falling apart 6.5 years with his girlfriend. So he couldn't he couldn't hold a job down. He totaled our car, so he gave us his car. So, you know, his whole life was falling apart. On top of which, at night, he had a little flashlight, and he was looking for camel spiders in his room at night that he could hear crawling around his room that they had in the desert. Mm. So, he was certainly not the person that had gone over to our Kuwait in January of 2003.
Well, we hear these stories, and I have tremendous empathy for you and your family. I wanted to ask, you mentioned he had mentioned it to his sister, and he had mentioned to the VA that he possibly could harm himself. Did he have a circle of friends that he ran around with? Did any of them suspect?
He was very social. He had a lot of friends, but when he came back, he became kind of secluded. He kind of just wanted to stay in his room. Even the young man that he joined the Marines with a friend and the buddy system back in 1999, they both went to Iraq together.
Mm.
And even there, he didn't want to play basketball. Jeff was very athletic, didn't want to play basketball anymore. And you know, like I said, he always had a smile on his face. So this, he hid everything. And that started really happening in March, which had been 3 months before he died, that you couldn't get him out of his room. And
yeah,
it was very difficult.
Well, that's when it's very serious. A lot of people who attempt suicide anyway, they tell a bunch of people and they make a big issue of it. It's the ones that don't say much that you really have to watch closely. I know a couple of things I wanted to ask. I know you testified at the Winter Soldier Conference.
Correct. Yeah.
That must have been difficult for you.
It was difficult, but I would do it again in a second. It was just an amazing group of people there, and they're all so compassionate, and they all have their own stories to tell. You know, they're all struggling, and it was just it was something I'll never forget. And the Iraq Veterans Against the War are just a great group of kids, and I see Jeffrey in them. And if I would have been so proud if Jeffrey had been there, I'd have backed him 100%. And these kids, they have a lot to offer. They're good kids. And, you know, like I said, I could see Jeffrey in them.
Well, one thing I wanted to ask, and I'm a liberal Democrat. I've been against this war since the whole thing started, and I think you would find 90-some percent of my audience is dead set against it as well. But so many times we talk about so many people have, and now we've reached this plateau of 4,000 and 20-some thousand injured, and God only knows how many people ended up like your son that won't be counted and most certainly should, because they are
right.
They are surely as much a casualty of this war as anybody who died on a battlefield. There isn't any question of that. Is it all in vain? Do you feel, what kind of feelings do you have? I understand that if you're there as a soldier, if you're there as a Marine or an airman or whatever, you don't want to say to yourself, I'm here for nothing. How do you feel having lost your son as far as the whole picture of the war?
I don't believe we should have entered in the first place, obviously. My son was against it going over, so I don't feel that my husband and I are doing anything that my son would not have wanted done. He was totally against going over to Iraq. I think just having lost one, I know the number's 4,000, but it's a number, and we need to put faces on these people. They belong in a community. They have families. So even if it was just one, it would have been too many. The reasons we went over, we were all misinformed. There was a lot of deception, and I don't think we should be there. But I don't think that having another death, another soldier die, is in any way going to say that we didn't do it in vain. You know, saying to have another one die so the ones that have already died didn't die in vain, I think is ridiculous.
Yes.
Just adding to the numbers, and that's just not that's not the way to go.
I think it was, John Kerry that said, how do you explain to the last man that dies, you know? The problem is, even when we bring everybody home, and that may not be any time in the future, the near future, I mean, we're going to continue to have casualties right here in the U.S. Of people that have come home and ended up with the same problems as your son. And is there words of advice that you can give anybody that would help in a similar situation?
Well, I think I would direct them to the vet centers now, because that is, the counselors there are veterans, and oftentimes the vet wants to only speak to a vet, which is the case with our son, because he'd always say you could never understand even when he would be speaking to us. So I think going to a vet center, and there's in Massachusetts here we have a program called SAVE, and it's run by veterans in Boston. And they're doing an outreach so that when the National Guard comes home, they're going right over there, and they're there with their van, and they're going to talk and give out cards. You have a problem, call me. You know, we'll advocate for you. They're not counselors, but they will advocate and direct them in the right direction to get assistance. So I think that kind of thing is important, to have an outreach. I think we have to develop that in every state, and better screening processes when they come home.
Well, I know you're going to continue to speak out on this, and I thank you for informing our audience of the tragedy of this and what we can possibly do to help. And it's something that's been set aside and not thought of, and even the whole entire war right now seems to be put on the back burner. It is, and that's a tragedy, because it's... we've got so much to deal with here with these young men and women coming back from there. Joyce, thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
I appreciate it very, very much. I know it's hard for you to talk about a personal family tragedy like this, and it's frankly, to tell you the truth, it's hard to listen. But America needs to listen to you.
We have to talk about it.
Yes, we do. Thanks so much, Joyce.
All right, thank you again.
Bye now.
Bye-bye now.
It's, I've talked to a couple of these families. Very difficult. They have a great attitude. They recognize what has happened and recognize the tragedy of it. There's a young man that joined the reserves. You don't know what's going to face you when you join the reserves, that's for certain. You know that you could be called up, that's part of the deal. But you expect your commander-in-chief not to call you into battle unless it's absolutely necessary. You don't expect your commander-in-chief to send you into a war that could be avoided. You don't expect your commander-in-chief to put you in harm's way until all avenues have been tried, until all diplomacy has ended, and until all negotiations that are possible have ended. You don't expect your commander-in-chief to do that to you when you're a reservist. Dick Cheney can talk about volunteer army all he wants to. But nobody, unless they're a fool, expects to be sent into a battle by their commander-in-chief on the basis of lies and misinformation to the American public. And who do those lies and misinformation hurt the most of all? Those 4,000 plus that have died. Those Jeffries, like we just spoke about. The 100 and... Oh. It's so unfair. It is so, so unfair. We're going to pause for a break, and we'll be back after this.
Close my eyes. Oh.
Ah, yes, Dust in the Wind, Air Supply. We find ourselves so often talking about the treasure that we've lost in this war. And we find ourselves so often talking about the money, the trillions of dollars that it'll end up costing this country in war materials and military pay and care for VA people, and other costs to the society that can't even be figured. It's a negative impact on our nation. But we talk about the money so very often, but not often enough do we talk about the real thing that we've lost, the real treasure we've lost, the over 4,000 people that we've lost, and people like Jeffrey that we've lost. Those people are the real treasure of this nation, not our money. Those people all had their lives cut short, all had what might have been situations. Who knows what future leaders we may have lost, fathers and mothers and sons and brothers and aunts and uncles and cousins, all the families that have lost these people are hurt and are suffering over it. And in my opinion, they're hurt and suffering over it, and it need not have been. This is the most needless war that we've been involved in yet. It was planned, instigated and planned and carried out by this administration. And we feel nothing but sorrow for all the families. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with that? You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. I hope you'll take a moment and give us a call at 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. We were talking a little earlier about the gentleman, and I don't want to call him a gentleman because he is not, about the Homo sapien, Dick Cheney. I was going to call him a man, but he's no kind of a man. I'm sure most of you saw the interview with him, and he was. Did you see the part where he was talking about the pardon of Richard Nixon? Did you see that, the interview with Dick Cheney, where he was explaining why he doesn't care what the American people think about the war in Iraq? I went back and found his quote on this about Richard Nixon, because I wasn't really sure I heard it right. And so let me quote Dick Darth Cheney here, and I'll give a direct quote. The President of the United States, under these circumstances, dealing with these kinds of issues, can't make decisions based on public opinion polls. He shouldn't. I had the experience, for example, this is Dick Cheney talking, of working for Gerry Ford. And I've never forgotten the travails he went through after he had been president for 30 days when he issued the pardon of former President Nixon. And there was consternation coast to coast. I know how much grief he took for that decision, and it may well have cost him the presidency in 76. Cheney goes on to say, 30 years later, nearly everybody would say that it is exactly the right thing to do, that if he'd paid attention at the time to the polls, he never would have done that. But he demonstrated, I think, great courage and great foresight, and the country was better off for what Gerry Ford did that day, and 30 years later, everybody recognized it. And I have the same strong conviction the issues we're dealing with today, the global war on terror, the war in Afghanistan and Iraq, that all of the tough calls the president has had to make, that 30 years from now, it will be clear that he made the right decisions and that the effort we mounted was the right one, and that if we'd listened to the polls, we would have gotten it wrong, end quote. Well, Dickie boy, you'll be dead in 30 years, and you won't give a damn then, you won't give a damn now, you never have give a damn what the American people think about anything, and you have got this completely dead wrong. Nearly everybody would say it was the right thing to do. Has Dickie boy taken a poll on this? That it was the right thing to do to pardon Richard Nixon? And I don't want to go back and relive history, but I believe there's a relevance to what happened then and what is happening now. It was the wrong thing to do. I believed it would lead to, at the time, I was one of those people with consternation over Nixon getting a pardon. I believed that it would lead to exactly the kind of problems we've faced with an out-of-control executive branch that thinks it can do any damn thing it wants and not fear any consequences from anyone. And this was the perfect administration to walk in and take advantage of that. And oh, by the way, Dick Cheney was there then, and he's here now. Nixon's pardon paved the way for Junior Bush to do the highly illegal, unethical things he has done. There is no other way to put it. I remember it well. Lots of you do. And I remember my feelings about it at the time. It was like telling Al Capone, "That's all right, Al. We're not going to put you in jail. In fact, you can keep everything you've stolen from everybody. Let's just let bygones be bygones." That's exactly what happened too. And the Republicans decided right then and there that when they got back in power, they were going to have free rein to lie, cheat, and steal their way to anything they desired, and they have done it in spades. The Constitution? Screw the Constitution. Who was it? That slime ball attorney general we got rid of, Alberto Gonzalez, said it was a quaint document. You think this entire administration doesn't feel that way about the Constitution of the United States? They've taken the Constitution and they've wiped their feet on it, and nobody has done a damn thing about it. The Democrats are complicit. They have sat there and not done anything about it. You stop back and say, look back and remember the Richard Nixon deal, instead of being hauled out of the White House in handcuffs and led off to jail along with some of his accomplices in the thing, Nixon got a nice little farewell party and took Air Force One back to California. Yeah, and that sure taught his successors a big lesson now, didn't it? And not only that, the Republicans have bitched and moaned about how unfair it was to Nixon ever since that time. Why, one of them even ended up with a talk show. And the Democrats? Oh, we're awfully sorry to have caused you any trouble. That's how they acted about it at all. Their actions against the Bush administration's illegal acts have reminded me of one of those old Wile E. Coyote cartoons when the Roadrunner makes an ass out of old Wile E. 100% of the time. You see it all the time. Wile E. huffs and puffs and blusters, but he ends up being tricked into falling off the cliff every single time, and that's the Democrats falling off the cliff. They've not had the cojones to do what needed to be done. So, Dickie Boy Cheney thinks history will absolve him and Bush of their crimes? I don't think so. I have enough faith still in the American public to think that sooner or later, they will see the truth about what these scoundrels have done to this country. I sat by last week while my friend Mark Levine asked John Conyers some pretty doggone tough pointed questions about what he's going to do about some of this mess. And of course, Mark didn't get any straight answers from Conyers, but he sure made him uncomfortable. They all need to squirm a bit in their seats because they haven't done enough. I don't know of a single one of them that's done enough. Oh, we want to spare the public from this. We don't want to go through this awful thing of impeachment. Never mind. Never mind that they could bring Bill Clinton up on impeachment charges. And this has got nothing to do with who Bill Clinton is, whether he's a Republican, Democrat, doesn't make any difference to me. That was ludicrous. That entire story was just absolutely absurd from start to finish. It was a circus orchestrated by the Republicans to get even. To get even over Richard Nixon. And they thought correctly, that the Democrats would not do a damn thing about George W. Bush and his accomplices in this war. And they were absolutely right. You look at the illegalities and the immoralities that have taken place in this administration since it started. You could write a thick book about it. And I think Junior Bush showed his contempt for the whole thing at that press dinner here just not long ago, singing that little song about Scooter. That shows what he thinks about it all. They have contempt for the entire American public. And there isn't anybody that has more contempt than Dick Cheney. I say again, I think I might have mentioned it yesterday, there have been some evil damn characters in our American political arena over the years, but I can't think of a single one of them that even comes close. That even comes close to Dick Cheney. You wouldn't want to hear me start in on what I really think about that man. They'd be over here. They would be over here if I told you what I feel about that man. He disgusts me. He's not a decent American. His actions haven't been the actions of an American patriot. His actions have not been the actions of a man and vice president. His actions haven't been the actions of a man who should be held any office whatsoever in this country, a man who should never have held a position of leadership in this country in any administration. And look how long he's been in political life in this country. And when he wasn't in political life in this country, he was in private business where he was stealing everything he could from a company that knows all about stealing everything they can get, Halliburton. Dick Cheney. Well, on a lighter note, not much lighter, I have been amazed, and you know, I've done my best, and I hope I have, and I hope you understand that I've done my best throughout this primary campaign to try and be fair to both of our candidates, and fair to all of them when we were had more than two. I like them a lot, both of them a lot. You know I do. And I have been ashamed and disappointed at the treatment of both of them at times by the press. And I am especially disturbed. The Daily Kos, Huffington Post, Buzz Flash, Democratic Underground, major, major liberal websites just sliming Hillary Clinton from day one. Not over just this latest flap, but from day one, just horrible hatred and slime towards her. I've been very disappointed at that. And you know I've been very disappointed at some of the things that have been said and done to Barack Obama as well. But something happened yesterday, I think it was yesterday, that completely baffles me. And I have been defensive about both of the candidates at times when unfairness has been thrown their way. But something happened that has just completely buffaloed me, and I don't know how anybody could have done this. And I'm talking about Hillary Clinton. And you know I think the world and all of Hillary Clinton, warts and all. But here's one that Hillary herself would have to explain to me. I'd have to hear this from her. And I hope someday I do hear this from her, if she'd want to talk about it. When she sat down for an interview with the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, which, as most of you know, is wholly owned by Richard Mellon Scaife. Not only did she submit to an interview with him, he was there on the podium, on the stage with her. Richard Mellon Scaife. This is the man that put up the money for the Arkansas Project, the American Spectator. This is a man that spent millions hunting down Bill Clinton. He spent millions on every dark right-wing operation that you can think of over the last couple of decades. And she got up on the stage with him, and they say they've mended fences. Hillary, you're going to have to tell me how you could mend fences with a rat like Richard Mellon Scaife. This is a terrible man. If you think that his political activities are all that I have to object about Richard Mellon Scaife about it, you would be wrong. Google him and you'll find plenty. I cannot imagine being desperate enough to get up on a stage with Richard Mellon Scaife, a man who had done untold harm and damage to Hillary Clinton's family. I just don't get that one, Hillary. I just don't. I think you shamed yourself by doing that. You really did. Not in a million years would even I get up on the stage to that man, and he's done nothing personally to me. I just can't imagine doing that, not in my wildest dreams. Hey, I do want to mention that we've got quite a little dust-up going on over to the blog, and I invite you to stop at our blog. Not many of you have. I've been a little disappointed in that. TheGuyJamesShow.com/blog. That's TheGuyJamesShow.com/blog. You really need to get over there and get involved. Bare your souls, test your political acumen and your argumentative abilities and all of that. You'll have a good time. There's a right-winger sitting over there probably right now waiting to get into it with you. So check it out. In fact, I got an email from my favorite right-winger recently complaining that there's not enough people over there wanting to talk to him. So do him a favor. Go over there and give him a shot or two, okay? 866-546-5254. We're going to take a break and be back in a moment or two.
Otherwise your skin is gonna turn to leather. We made a movie in Vietnam. Tax break set. We're gonna shoot a location. The rug says made in Korea. Manufactured in a factory using cheap labor. All over Asia, third world becoming a major league player. Mass production in Saigon, while all to work is laid off in Cleveland. Hot jacuzzi in Taiwan, with empty factories in Birmingham. Those baby boomers in Hong Kong, and cowboys in Vietnam, making their movies. Big confusion in Hollywood now. American Major League in Japan, Hamburger in China, with sushi bars in Maine and Boston, dollar signs and expandables, cowboys in Vietnam, making their movies. Wake up in the White House, zip up your pants and get it together. Take a look at your overseas neighbor. Look at their strange behavior. Ooh. Take a look at your wigwam. Inside it says the province is Asian. Once it was only in movies. Now it's a product invasion. Mass production in Saigon. While all the workers laid off in Cleveland. Hot jacuzzi in Taiwan. Empty factories in Birmingham. Now it's sweatshops in Hong Kong. Yes, cowboys in Vietnam. Making our movies. Let's make a movie in Vietnam.
Well, anyway, that was supposed to play. There we go. We were supposed to have some bumper music coming back in, but had a gremlin there someplace. Welcome back to the show. We got about 5 minutes left. I said that if you didn't make a lot of phone calls today, I was going to play Feelings all day long. But, you know, I just got the strangest email a minute ago. And if my computer decides to cooperate here. Come on here, machine. Acting a little weird today. I wanted to let everybody know, and especially those of you in the New York City area, that you have a once-in-a-lifetime experience coming up, a chance that you may never, ever have again. There's a cool nightclub there, a comedy club, whatever you want to call it, a little theater, called Shoot the Messenger. And, you know, not long ago we had Liz Wanstead on the program. It used to be with SNL and all that, and she's a great comedian. And Liz appears there just about every week. But, oh, my God, you're going to want to have to hear this, that on Monday, March 31st, that's this coming Monday, in the Green Room Theater at Blecher in Lafayette, one night only, making a rare East Coast appearance, rare, Ed Schultz. That's right, Ed Schultz. In an industry where the conservative voice is king, Ed Schultz's popularity, talent, and progressive political bent has helped him become the dominant progressive radio voice of the nation. So there. Don't say that I didn't help him out. Our good friend Ed, don't know how he's going to do it in a setting like that because, gosh, he had to leave the Take Back America conference after only one day because it was too noisy for him. Yes, he just couldn't function with all the other broadcasters around, and he had to leave early. Left the organizers of the thing holding the bag. Nice of him. Very nice of him. But he is going to be in New York City in a rare appearance. Yes, rare. And for only $12.50, you can see Ed Schultz one night only. A rare East Coast appearance live in New York City. I guess you can tell by now that it's not my best friend. I guess he'd tell you the same thing about me. So I'll be fair about that. I see the official Guy James Show Yorkies have walked into the studio. One of them anyway. There's little Sophie and there's Kukla over there. Yes, we got these two Yorkies. They are the official. Official. How many shows have the official Guy James Show puppies? One of them is what they call a silky Yorkie that's silver and tan, and the other one is a regular Yorkie that's black and tan. And they're both adorable little animals. Really, really they are. Love them to death. They're too cute. As you people have your dogs that like them very much, you, I guess everybody thinks their own kid and their own dog is really cute, but really these are. Sophie's looking at us now like, I got you wrapped around my finger, big boy. You do anything I want. Yeah, well, that's how it is. Here I am sitting here talking about Ed Schultz and dogs. Now, I don't... I don't know why, but I just had to. Maybe you've all gotten that email about Ed being in New York as well. So only $12.50 you'd be able to get on over there. Anyway, we got, gee whiz, the time is going fast here. And on the chat room, plus the train fare to New York City. Have you been on a train lately? On my last trip to Washington, I thought I'd be cool and take an Amtrak. I thought it'd save some money. Oh, mama, the price of the Amtrak from Florida, besides taking 24 hours for the trip, wow, couldn't believe it. It was more expensive than flying. I just couldn't get over that. Well, anyway, enough of the travel log for today. I do want to thank you all for being with us here today on the Guy James Show. Here in the Head On Radio Network, Billy Shears, music director, And don't forget, you heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow again.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm caught a little unprepared because I'm getting clips ready for you. It is, of course, the fifth anniversary of the Iraq War. And I thought it was important to take a look back at the administration and how they have sold this war to us for so long. You probably heard the Vice President of the United States, Dick Cheney, and how he approached the war. And if you'll just give me a few seconds, I'm going to load this up and play them for you. So, Bob, play a little bit of music. I'm going to load these videos up.